One of the things I wanted, but I just want to ask you a question. Have you all ever just kind of just stopped just to kind of just think about creation itself? You're just actually just stopped, just actually just stopped and pondered all the time, just kind of pondered it. It is, and it really is. And one of the things that I do find just really fascinating about all that, everything that we see around us, and I know this, and none of this, what I'm getting ready to say, is nothing new. But again, it's just, I find it fascinating that everything that we see around us, completely created out of nothing. You know, before time, space, and even matter, the only thing that existed was God, and He existed in perfect harmony within Himself, and He had no need for anything. He didn't need any of this that we see around us. He had no need for it. He was perfect just within Himself. Creation, scientists have basically proven that everything in the known universe, you know, everything had a beginning. It did all come from something. Just to kind of give you just a little tidbit of information. Back in 2001, NASA actually launched a probe called the Wilkins Microwave Anisotropy Probe that for 10 years collected data for our entire universe, measuring radiation, different energy levels, and just for 10 years just collecting data. After the 10 years was up, they came up with a timeline for the universe just to try to give it an age. And based on everything, and of course, this was stuff that other scientists had also known for a while. The timeline they came up with, you have this expanding universe and everything coming down to a beginning. And then before that, absolutely nothing. Basically, science has proven that everything that we see around us did have a beginning, that it seemed to have come from nothing. Of course, as Christians, we've known this, you know, for quite some time. science has actually called up to us. but nothing is something that, you know, something that we're never going to be able to comprehend. I mean, if you look into an empty box, there's still something there. There's air, there's space, the sides of the inside of the box. There's still something there. So true nothingness is something that we're never going to be able to comprehend. And just to kind of give you an idea of what best way to illustrate nothing, it's a quote that I heard. I think it was, he's an apologetist named Frank Turk, if you've ever heard of him. It was a quote by Aristotle that says, "Nothing is what rocks dream about." So that's what nothing is. It's what a rock dreams about. Okay. But yet there was something, and that was God. And again, God needed nothing. Everything he had everything, because he was a perfect being. For God to have needs, if he actually needed stuff, that would actually make him complete. He couldn't live without it. We have needs. There are things that we cannot live without. I cannot live without food. I need food. I need air. I need water. I need clothing. Summertime, when it's really hot, that could be questionable, debatable, but still need clothing. At least a fig leaf, you're right. But again, needs are things that you have to have them. That was not true of God. He had everything that he needed. However, he did have wants. God wanted things. He did have desires. And a need and a want, I mean, they are two completely different things. If I go out to a restaurant, yes, I need food. I need to eat. The 8-ounce steak, the little side salad, and the little small baked potato will perfectly suit my need for hunger, but that's not what I want. What I really want is that 16-ounce ribeye with the large baked potato completely filled with everything, and the giant salad with everything on it, plus the yeast rolls and all the butter to go with it, and the endless supply of sweet tea. That's what I really want. This over here, that will perfectly satisfy my need for hunger, but what I really want, that's what will bring me much joy, Maybe in the car ride home, I'm going to regret it. But still, at the time it's happening, my want is being fulfilled, and it's going to bring me so much more joy than just fulfilling just a basic need. And if you think about it, again, that's kind of, and with God, I mean, again, he didn't need us, but he wanted us. God wanted a family. He wanted to create a family for himself. In fact, he decided to create actually two families. He created the spiritual family, and then eventually the family he created out of physical material. And when we look at the Bible, we come across passage about the heavenly host, the divine, you talk about the divine council in 1 Kings 22:19. You read about, and while I get up, I'll go ahead and read it. And here Micaiah said, "Therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the hosts of heaven standing beside him at his right hand and on the left. And the Lord said, 'Who will entice Ahab? And he will go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead.' And one said one thing, and the other said another. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord, saying, 'I will entice him.' And the Lord said to him, 'By what means?' And he said, 'I will go out, and he will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets.' And he said, 'You are to entice him, and you shall succeed. Go out and do so.'" Okay. And I bring this passage, and the reason I bring this passage up is because this is an example of where, even though, again, God wanted his family, he wanted his families, but more importantly, when he created these families, he wanted us to be in a partnership with him. He wanted his creation to participate with him. And this is an example of where God is actually meeting with his heavenly host and actually asking them for input, which is interesting because he knows exactly what they're going to say. He knows what the outcome is going to be, but he still allows them to go ahead and he asks, okay, how shall we do this? And actually gives them a chance to talk it over. And again, as far as heavenly hosts, again, with the spiritual family, you read in Luke and in Psalms, and you get in other books of the Bible that talks about the heavenly host. And we know in Genesis, God creates his physical creation, and he created humans to be part of his family. And again, why did he do this? Why did a perfect being with no needs, at peace with himself, living in perfection, create all that he did? It's just what he wanted. It's that simple. It's what he wanted. It was his desire, like I said before. God really has no need for all that we see around us, but he still wanted it, and he wanted to have all this because he wanted all that he had because it did. It brings him joy. We bring him joy. His creation brings him joy. And if you think about it, and again, like I said, and just think about when you got something that you really wanted. Again, not needed. Just think about something that you really wanted. How much satisfaction and joy did that bring you when you got the object of your desire? Did it just bring you a little bit of joy, or when you got the thing that you really wanted, were you really excited about it? For a little while, but at the time, I mean, you were, again. Okay. Like I said, it just brought him so much joy to create all the things that he wanted. And after he created his families, his desire, again, was for them to partner with him in his creation. Think about in Genesis. What did he ask Adam to do after he created him? Basically, what? Exactly. Tend the garden. I mean, couldn't God have just done it himself? Why did he need Adam to do it? God's capable of doing everything. Why can't he just do it himself? Just let Adam just do whatever. Just run around him and Eve and just live. It's not what he wanted. He wants us to be active in his creation. And not only does, again, not only does he want us to participate as in his creation, I mean, he made us his imagers to be on this planet. We bear his image, and we are to partner with him. We are to participate. We are to participate in the works the Lord has set before us. And again, and as I was putting this down again, it is baffling. Because again, he's omniscient. He's all. I mean, he's all powerful. He can do everything. He can do everything that he can do anything that he wants. But he's asked. But he calls us to work with him. To work with him, because again, that's how a family works. All members of a household work together, and that's the thing. That's something else that we see. That is something that we also see with God, is how God uses it. God gives us visual illustrations about how he operates and how he works with his creation. Think about how a typical household works. If you have a mother, you have a father, you have children. You have God, Son, Holy Spirit. Families represent the triune nature of God. You got three parts, one thing. God and his husband, wife represent what? Husband, wife. Think about God's relationship, Jesus and his relationship with his church. Yes. God gives us all these visual illustrations to basically just kind of reveal reveal things about himself, and again how he wants us to work with him. If you have children, when they reach a certain age, what do you start having them do when they're finally old enough around the house? Exactly, you give them chores. You don't let them just sit around doing nothing. When they are finally old enough to pick up that broom, pick up that rag, you want them to work with you. You want them to help you, to partner with mom and dad, to run the household, to keep it functioning, to keep it clean. You want them to help you. God's the same way. He gives the family setup is a visual illustration of how he wants us to work with him. And you see all these visual, and again, and you see all these visual illustrations throughout the Bible. If you look at Leviticus, the way the rituals were done with the sacrifices. I mean, wouldn't it have just been simpler just to, when they did the sacrifice, just sacrifice the animal, say a prayer, and just call it a day? That would have been very easy, very streamlined. But no, what was the purpose of you having the priest, the garments, the burning of the incense, the building of the tabernacle, and then eventually the temple, the building of the Ark of the Covenant, all the decorations, all the elaborate setup? What was the purpose of all those individual elements? Obedience. Also to obedience, because again, God, that's what he wanted. He said, do that. Even though, again, there could have been a way that could make it a lot easier, but he said, nope, we're going to do that. Because again, visual illustrations, I think, give a much more lasting impact. I mean, he can tell you, you can tell somebody one thing, but if you tell them and you show them at the same time, it kind of leaves a better impression. Think about it. The burning of the incense, what does that represent? Prayers going up, the sacrificing of the animal, the burning it on the altar, and then eventually when they laid their hands down on the scapegoat and then had it run off, the visual illustration of the sin leaving the people. And of course, all those rituals were to illustrate the coming of the Messiah and what he was eventually going to do on the cross. It gave them all these visuals to go with. God uses all these visuals around us to illustrate, again, how he wants us to work with him, and to, again, just to show us again, what he wants. There are there are mysteries about God, but a lot of his mysteries, again, are revealed if you just look. Like, he's like, this is how I want things done. Just look at what I've got set up here. This is how I want it done. Do that. Okay. And here we go. And going back with his partnership with us, if we look at the life of Jesus in his ministry. Jesus, God on earth, in the flesh, calls 12 disciples. Were his disciples needed? Did he need any of them? Nope. Jesus could have done every single thing on his own. And sometimes, considering how the disciples acted, it almost seemed like he was kind of doing a lot of things on his own. I could imagine Jesus probably did a lot of face palms. It's like, oh, how much longer must I put up with this deterioration? How much longer must I put up with you? See, I really love that quote that Jesus says in the Bible. So much, because it makes me feel better. Because if I get frustrated with somebody for a legitimate reason, it's like, you know, Jesus got. It's like, I don't feel guilty about it. It's like, you know, Jesus got frustrated. He didn't hate the people. It wasn't because he hated them or really disliked them. He's just like, oh boy. It's like, all right, let's try again. so we get the point. I don't know why, but those passages, it's like I can kind of just relate to them. I relate to them a lot with that. It's like I get it. Yes, yeah, so like when he cursed the tree and made it wither, it's like, you're still frustrating me. Nah, I love you. yeah. Anyway, let me get back on track. But again, no, God and all that he wanted to accomplish, again, could have easily done it himself, but again, that's not what he wanted. Jesus, God, partnered with his creation to fulfill his ministry. And of course, in Matthew 28:16-20, Jesus gives the Great Commission to his disciples to continue his work. Okay. And let me see if I can find it here. And of course, in order for this partnership to work out, you have to be willing to. I mean, you need to be willing to want to participate in it. And the book of Amos, chapter 3, verse 3, says, "Do two walk together unless they have agreed to do so." Okay, you're called to partner with God in the work that He's called you to do. But in order for that partnership to work out, you have to agree on your part that you're going to participate in it. And if you think about it, the fact that God wanted us, but he did not need us. I mean, if God needed his creation, again, like I said, not only would that make him incomplete, but think about the position that would put us in. If we were needed to fulfill his work, that would kind of give us a little chip on our shoulder, because that would make us go around going, oh, well, God needs me to get this done. Without me, this is not going to get accomplished. The fact that he wants the partnership, the fact that, yes, he could do it all himself, but the fact that he wants that partnership and is willing to work with us, even if we may fail, he still wants us to try. He still wants us to try to work with him the best we can. Okay. And just remember, as part of this partnership, as you here on this planet, again, we're all representatives of God. We're, like I said, we are his imagers. And just remember what you do, and just kind of remember what you do represent. Like I said, when we look around us, at the discoveries that have been made about the universe we live in. Again, you represent a being that is beyond time, who's infinite, You represent a being who crafted galaxies, the sun, the stars, black holes. You represent a being who knows all things past, present, and future. You represent who foreknew what the objects of his desire, us, that he wanted, he knew, foreknew that we would ultimately fail him. He foreknew it. He didn't, no, not predestined. He foreknew the evil his imagers would create, but he still wanted us anyway. Think about that. Right before he created us, he knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew exactly that not only the members of his spiritual family would fall, but also his physical family, us, that we eventually would fail, that we were going to fail him miserably. He still wanted us, and he still wanted us. And again, knowing all of that, it was still better to create us than to not create us at all. In God's mind, it's still better to have you here, knowing that this evil is going to be committed, that evil is going to be committed. It's still better to have you here, knowing all that, than to not have you at all. Yeah. And like I said, that's who, again, as his imagers on this planet, that's who we represent. That's his love for us. No, again, so much so that from the beginning, knowing all that he knew, his plan was, yeah, I know what's going to happen, but I'm going to make a way to redeem you back to me. It was all part, again, there was no plan B. Plan A from the beginning, create my family, they partner with me. Yes, they're going to fail. Don't worry. I'm going to make sure that they are still going to be partner with me. I'm going to give them away to be redeemed back to me. It's all part of the plan. Because again, he wants us to participate with him in his works, in his ministries. And again, just to be an active, again, he just wants us to be an active part in his creation and all the good things that he made, and in all the good things that he made for us. Say what you want about the world. Say what you want about our world. It's our home. He created all this for us. It's not perfect. At one point it was. It's not perfect right now, but it's still our home. And we can help make, we ourselves are never going to make it perfect, but are there ways we can help make it better? Yeah. We can help make it better a little bit by a little bit. Again, God calls you into a ministry that could, I mean, it may start small in a community. It could be something that could be statewide. It could be something countrywide, or maybe something that's something that crosses multiple nations. Again, we're never going to make it perfect, but his partnership with us and what he wants us to do, we can make it a little bit better. Okay? Through the prayer and being willing to walk with him and to work with him.